This is the Amanda Galas. You are listening to CKUT 90.3 FM.
I am Sharif Sahnawi, a musician from Beirut, Lebanon, where I was born and where I lived most of my life. Basically, we founded Irtijal in the year 2000, so that's 23 years ago, but actually held our first festival edition in 2001. So today the festival is 22 years old. We've held 22 editions in 22 years and are now planning for the 23rd for April 2023. What happened then? I mean, we were, you know, young musicians, very dedicated to whatever it is we were doing at the time. Very much in love with all types of experimental and contemporary music, with free improvisation, with free jazz, which was like the start of it all for us, like people like Cecil Taylor, Coltrane, Ornette, you know, this was the big push for us in our youth to this big huge motivation to get into music. And the context of Lebanon and why we decided to create this festival, today it seems like so much has changed. It was really a completely different time, but still I kind of remember it as if it was yesterday, oddly enough. So basically, the civil war we had for like more than 15 years supposedly ended in 89. But in my memory, as a adolescent, post-adolescent kid in Beirut, like that's like between 1990 and 1993, nothing indicated that anything had really ended. There was no belief. You know, we had been in this war situation for so long that it takes more than a couple of years to really incorporate that it's over. Added to that, you're not sure it's over. Nobody's sure it's over, and there's still so much to rebuild that you're factually living in a civil war environment, in a civil war aftermath, in a civil war almost like decor, you know, and dynamics, and everything that runs the country is still governed by civil war logic. So it's all still there, except the civil war itself, which stopped. So basically, I would estimate that this atmosphere stayed till like the mid-late 90s easily. And so the impact on the artistic world in general and the music world is that there was barely any. There was absolutely nothing. No festivals, barely any sustainable or decent venue for music. And at the time, music events would happen in foreign cultural centers. For me and other musicians at the time, there was Christine Abdennour, there was Mazen Kerbaj, soon joined by Raed Yassin and other players. You know, the idea is, how can we make it happen for ourselves, but also to spread and share, you know, whatever it is we had learned about the multiple possibilities of sound and of music with our country. For me, it was a very internal feeling. So when I started playing shows abroad in any country on the planet, you know, there's always a bit of excitement before a show, let's say, to make it simple. But whenever I would play a show here in Lebanon, that excitement was coupled by, like, multiplied by 10, I would say, at least. So I could feel, yeah, for me, something is different when I'm in this country. I feel the stakes are higher, I feel more motivated, and I feel more compelled and gratified if the results are positive. And this is basically, you know, I'm happy to play anywhere on the planet, that's not the question. I'm super happy, but for me, there is an added value in being in my country, and that, I guess, was clear since the beginning and created a huge drive to do whatever I can to develop things here. And, you know, 22 years later, I'm still at the same place. It's unbelievable. I'm still maybe even more motivated today than I was before, organizing the festival, running the association year-round, creating initiatives, workshops, commissions, supporting the art scene in any way I can, but also enjoying it in any way I can.
For people who aren't familiar, can you just describe a bit about Makam improvisation?
Makam is the scale system of traditional Arabic music. There are, I would say, over 90 makams, and I'm no expert, and each one has its own sets of notes, its own types of progression, and specific ways to play them, and specific songs to play with, like the traditional song format of the Arab world is called tarab, and tarab is based on makams or various makams. So that's basically the base of it. If you go back to its origin, indeed, it's much less strict than the let's say the tempered version we sometimes use today, and it's very intuitive. It's very not written. It's all in the ears, you know, and it's very microtonal music in a way.
The cultural heritage of Lebanon has been affected by, I mean, we can go deep into history, but, like, you know, in your lifetime, the cultural landscape and reality of creation, like the city that you live, has been deeply affected by the Israeli state. And, you know, your own festival, I'm sure, Ertijal, has been also affected in terms of the possibility for artists to visit, in terms of the fact that post-Civil War, there's not been a lot of institutional cultural funding for artists in Lebanon. There's many factors involved in this. I'm talking about, like, public funding, like, in, you know, people might not get that there isn't the Canada Council for the Arts or et cetera in Beirut. But all of this to say, like, people often think of, like, let's say the war in 2006 or the constant violations of Lebanese airspace by the Israeli government as events, you know, as sort of like this happened, you know, and they sort of talk about those things as moments. But I think maybe less often people think about how does that whole, how do all these moments and these devastating events impact the cultural landscape of a musician, right? Or what people think is possible, or how people think about music, right? Like how it creates a totally different world, essentially, you know? It's not like the war just ends, you know, it has a resonance that sustains for a long time. Like, I mean, which war are we talking about? I mean, I was referencing 2006, for example, but there's many other examples. Yeah, I don't know if you have any reflections on that.
At the time, in 2006, I was living in France. It's part of a decade where I lived in France. It's a time where I had a big hesitancy around should I keep living in France, should I go live in a different country, or should I come back to Lebanon and resettle here, which was my tendency at the time. And it so happened that we were here when the July war started, doing a project with a Colombian musician called Ricardo Arias, workshops, concerts, an ensemble, etc. And yeah, the Israelis started bombing during that project. So I was here. The entire like scene we had, the whole Irtijal organization was in the country working on that project. This months-long bombing, where I had the possibility to be evacuated, actually, and I turned down that offer to be evacuated. I can't live with the idea that somebody made me escape from my own country. I couldn't face it. For me, I would stay here years, if needed, till the end of that aggression, in a way. And the aftermath made it clear to me. So, yeah, clearly, I will leave France and come back and live in Lebanon. Whereas, you know, the natural tendency is to move away. For me, it was the other way around. It took me a year to be back, and I haven't left the country since. I mean, I haven't lived anywhere else since. Of course, I leave the country very often. But that was the single decisive event that made me want to live here. And that desire to live here, where I am today, has been the same since. That's at least how I see things, and how anybody who tells me, you know, don't live here or leave here, will have the opposite effect on me. It will make me want to stay here even more. Not in a nationalistic perspective, because there's so much I hate about this country, and I've always hated, but it's still my country. Nobody decides for me if I live here or if I leave here. And that's one way to put it. Yeah.
I mean, this sort of leads to Musicians for Palestine. You know, you were involved in supporting that letter and asking artists to sign it, but you also signed yourself. Why? You know, I ask this to every person on this podcast. Why was it important for you? And, you know, why is it also important that musicians continue to talk about Palestine, both within Lebanon, but also globally?
You know, we've been here. I mean, this letter and also the events that came before put the so-called conflict, but it's not really a conflict. The Israeli-Palestinian conflict is not a conflict, in my opinion, on the world map. So people were talking about it, and it's good. And now again, with the for example, the murder of Shirin, People are talking about it. It's again, and that's good that people are talking about it. But for some people, from which I consider myself as being part of, we're always talking about Palestine. We're always trying to do as much as we can in support for an extremely extended period of time. People denied basic rights. People killed without a reason. Like, I mean, you know, I guess everybody listening to this podcast will know this, but I still want to state it again. I hope people listen to the podcast who don't agree with us, although I struggle to express how monumental this crime is. I really struggle. I try to express how monumental it is, and I still feel it's much bigger and it's much more horrible than this. You know, I just, you know, I never felt satisfied by expressing how horrible it is, to be honest. Yeah, I often call it the matrix of the injustice of mankind. So it's I see it in that way. It's you know, if you want to study injustice, if you want to study inhumanity, you have the matrix here. And I think insidiously, some people use it to, you know, if you want to, let's say, any far-right government anywhere on the planet wants to spread lies and falsehood and basically to brainwash its population, it has a playbook. It just has to see how Israel does it and apply the same principles, and in many cases you will see that they will get away with it, at least partially, whereas Israel gets away with it fully.
And now for some news you can use. July 1st was moving day in Quebec, but many households are still without a home. If you or someone you know needs help, you can call the housing advocacy group FRAPRU. It stands for Front d'Action Populaire en Aménagement Urbain. Their number is 514-522-1010. You can also call the City of Montreal for help at 311. And Shelter Movers Montreal needs volunteers. The organization helps victims of domestic violence leave their abusers, providing free moving and storage services. In the wake of Quebec's Moving Day, Shelter Movers Montreal has a waiting list of 2 months for these services. For more information on how to get involved, visit sheltermovers.com/volunteer. And the shelter, The Open Door, is looking for clothing donations, which you can drop off at 3535 Park Avenue. For more information, including what items are needed, visit the Mobilizing for MP Instagram page. And the menstrual equity nonprofit, Monthly Dignity, is looking for volunteers to head its communications and design team. The application deadline is July 18th. For more information, visit the Monthly Dignity Instagram page.
News Radio. Thank you. Thank you. the breeze flow straight out of our lids. Them, they got boo bodies, hard rock Brooklyn kids. Us, floor rush, when they DJ booming classics. You dig the crew on the fattest hip-hop record. He touched the kinks and sinks into the sounds. She frequents deep, fatter joints called undergrounds. Our funk zooms like you hit the Mary Jane. They flock to booms, man, Boogie had to change. Who freaks the clip?
You are listening to see, I can say it. CKUD in Montreal.
This program is uncut. It contains strong language and some adult situations. Discretion is advised.